Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we shall continue our afternoon session sharing. We are at 1:15 to 3 o'clock. So puja followed by briefing by Bhatio on how to strengthen the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, to root out the opposite five mental hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. Then to develop the understanding of the following essential Dhamma. So the four right efforts we have gone through, the five ways to overcome wrong or unwholesome thought. Now, this one I will go through. Then the five daily contemplation, which we have done. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, which we have gone through. The five ingredients of form and mind, we have gone through. The 12 links. Then four noble truths, we also gone through. Four foundation of mindfulness, we also briefly touched on it. The seven factor of enlightenment also, we have briefly touched on it. The importance of devotional practice or puja. So every day, different topic. Okay. So now we will maybe just go through a bit of this five spiritual faculty and five mental hindrance. So as we all know, there are two sets of mind state. The Buddha, in his teaching, taught us the five spiritual faculty and the five mental hindrance. So what are spiritual faculties? What are mental hindrance? So this one very important. Okay, since I don't have space in the whiteboard, I will have to maybe verbally explain to you. You see, according to the Buddha, as a human being, when we do not have the five spiritual faculty that can enable us to understand spiritual teaching, that's why it's called a spiritual faculty. And what are they? He said, when you don't have faith in the Buddha and his teachings, Saddha, then when you don't have virya, spiritual zeal or tenacity to go this way after understanding how unique the Buddha's teaching is and how unique a being the Buddha is. He's not only enlightened, but he's fully enlightened. So with sati, the faith, you will develop the spiritual zeal, virya. Then it will drive you to cultivate sati, mindfulness, which is the basis of heedfulness and development of awareness within. That's why sati is the third spiritual faculty. And when there is sati, you can stabilize it so that it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is not really concentration. It is a free mind in a state of collectedness and unwavering state, that is samadhi. Then with sati and samadhi, your mind will not stir. It can see things as they are, thereby giving rise to wisdom. That's why it can awaken the cultivator. So when you can see things as they are, you develop the understanding. You see things as they are. You insight in the phenomena and awaken to the three characteristics of nature, which is anicchang, dukkang, and anatta. That's why with sati and samadhi, wisdom keep on arising. So these five spiritual faculty, most cultivators do not understand its significance. That's why in the puja chanting book, I help you all to invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions for your spiritual faculty to become unshakable or balas. So all these are very important understanding. Then the Buddha say, if you don't have them, your most cultivator, they don't understand the five spiritual faculty to the extent that it can help them in their cultivation. Maybe Saddha, Virya, they know. But what is Sati? Most people got it wrong. Sati is mindfulness or awareness before the knowing. There is no thought involved. It's just an awareness. Then when that awareness stabilizes, it becomes collected and unwavering. That's how you can use it to live life. Then at the moment of sense experience, it does not stir or waver. It does not get conditioned into like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, which means it does not create mental hindrance. So the Buddha, at the same time, he said, if you don't have the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance will arise. And this mental hindrance, the most common one, are sensual desire and ill will. Just throughout the day, when we arise the thought process, upon contact of mind with the respective sense basis and the respective sense data, it triggers off the respective sense door consciousness. Then because of our views, opinion, conditioning and belief system and the egoic mind, because of Sakkaya Ditti, we react and stir and create the evil roots. So this greed, hatred and delusion is the basis of mental hindrance. So greed and hatred is like the positive and negative aspect of craving. That's why the first two mental hindrances are sensual desire and ill will. When throughout the day you react to sense experience, develop the like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, these are mental hindrances. So if they are mental hindrances, they will hinder you from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner awareness or inner calmness to realize your true mind. That's why most people cannot meditate. And they are called mental hindrance. It really hinders you. So if throughout the day you are so habitual in your way of living life, you stir your mind through like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, means you keep on creating sensual desire, ill will, every now and then. Whenever you experience a what they call contact within your sense basis and nature. So if you do that so often, it becomes so habitual. That's why this habitual tendency will create continuous mental hindrance of sensual desire, ill will. That's why you got your like and dislike, your craving, your desire, your aversion, your fear, your worry, your anxiety. All these are negativity of mind state, psychological memory, which are detrimental for you to develop the meditative mind. That's why it's called mental hindrance. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why they cannot meditate. Yeah. So mental hindrance is something that you have to be watchful of. Why do they arise in you? And how can you root it out? That's why all these are very useful, very important. Then apart from the first two, mental hindrance or sensual desire, ill will, which is very common, but this one is one pair linked to sensual desire, is linked to our what they call greed or craving. then ill will is linked to hatred. Then the third mental hindrance is, they call it sloth and torpor. This one is lethargic mind, the dull mind, the sleepy mind. When you are sleepy, you cannot pay attention. When you are lazy, you cannot pay attention. So the mind become like lethargic, dull. And there is a mental hindrance. If your mind is sleepy, lethargic and dull, then how can it develop the wisdom and the understanding? That's why it's called mental hindrance. Then number four, the Buddha knew. He said, restlessness of mind. When you have fear, worry, anxiety, your mind becomes restless. Means this fear, worry, anxiety make you restless. If you are restless, means you got problem, unresolved issue and problem. You worry about it. And this restlessness of mind will obscure your true mind. It will prevent you from having the clarity of mind to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom and the understanding. That's why when you are restless, you worry, you have a lot of anxiety, all the negativity of mind state. That's why it's a mental hindrance. So you cannot silence your mind to meditate because that thing keep on haunting you. Your fear, worry, anxiety make you restless. Especially in life, when you have financial problem or the first noble truth reality problem, like health problem, relationship problem, financial problem, all the other life related problem, career problem, like when you come to know that you are going to lose your job, or they are going to give you a love letter and ask you to go. In our dialect, they call cha liu hua, fry your sotong. So, means they don't need you already. So, all this trigger of the mind to have this fear, worry, anxiety, then you become restless. Then, how can you meditate? That's why it's a mental hindrance. Then, the other one, last one, is doubt. The Buddha say, when you don't have the understanding of his teaching, you will doubt. Am I doing it correctly? Is this the way to meditate? Is this teacher teaching the right thing? Then sometimes you even doubt the Buddha. Really, God Buddha? Then when people tell you he is the fully enlightened one, you like cannot have an understanding of what that special nature is. What is the meaning of Sammasambuddhahood, fully enlightened? Because you were not taught and nobody can explain to you. So the doubt linger. Then sometimes after a while they think maybe what people tell them is true because they heard Buddhism, like what we on the first day yesterday went through. Life is suffering. Noble truth or dukkha, suffering. Why I want to know about suffering? That is not life to me. That is misery. Then you say, maybe to play safe, I go to another religion then and believe. Or then that one say, we teach you love, teach you compassion. Then they sing hymn and make you feel good and happy. Then you say, maybe this one easier, because this one tell you if you believe, you will have eternal life in the hereafter. If you don't believe, you will be condemned to eternal hell and all those things. So they say like buy insurance. That's why they change religion, religious labor, all those things. So this doubt creates mental hindrance. It prevents you from seeing the truth, understanding the truth, and making the correct decision. So the Buddha said, when you have this five mental hindrance, what must you do? Because if you cannot stop it or root it out, they will continue to haunt you. But according to the Buddha, it's very simple. He said, you cultivate the opposite five mental hindrance, they will counter them all. So the first one is sadha, faith. Faith in what? In the Buddha and his teaching, through knowing how special a being he is and how unique a teaching that he has proclaimed. He not only explained to you the secret of life, he even helped you to understand life and to free your mind from suffering. Means enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. And he is not only an enlightened being, he is fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue. So to have such a being as your teacher and your guide, your faith is very strong. That's why that faith will make your mind composed, calm. If you have faith through this understanding, which fetter will it counter? Yeah? It will counter restlessness of mind there. Because with the faith, your mind is calm, composed. No more restlessness, no more problem. Then the other one is doubt. You got no more doubt. Because you know who the Buddha is, how unique a being he is, how special a being he is. That's why these two, you can actually deal with it. Then once you have the virya, spiritual zeal or tenacity develop, means you will not be sleepy, understand? Where you see the importance of this teaching and you develop the spiritual zeal and tenacity to go all out to cultivate this teaching. That's why sleepiness, sloth and torpor, lethargic mind, no more. Then when you develop sati, what happened? Sati is just awareness without word, without the thought process, so without duality, all those things. So when you are able to be in the state of sati, there is no fear, worry, anxiety. Your mind is tranquil and still, leading to your ability to realize the true mind. So when that happens, your mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will be negated, because there is no more duality in your mind. It's just pure awareness, the mindfulness aware. And when you have the stability of mindfulness, after that you stabilize your sati and develop samadhi, your mind becomes collected, unwavering. So when samadhi is developed, it will not stir. It will not give rise to the like and dislike pleasure. So sensual desire, you will also root out. Then when wisdom arises, no more sakkayaditi, no more delusion, all the five mental hindrances cease to be. That's why only wisdom free, nothing else. Okay, so now you have finished that part. The next one is four right effort I have gone through. Huh? Five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. Huh? So this one, the Buddha in his teaching actually taught the monks. He said there are five ways to overcome wrong thought or unwholesome thought. What are wrong thought? What are unwholesome thought? Thought that is with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, because they are the root of all evil. And this one will condition the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion and make you evil. Like when you go about living your life, when you have craving, desire, covetousness, greediness, then when you become angry, violent, develop jealousy, hatred, all these are with the evil roots of greed and hatred. And when there is fear, worry, anxiety, there is self-delusion there. That's why the three evil roots, they manifest very fast. So when they arise in you, the Buddha say, you have to arise the right effort to abandon it. So how can you abandon the wrong thought? Like your fear, your worry, your anxiety. How can you do it? What is the first way to abandon wrong thought? Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. When there is anger, you must develop what? Metta, understand not, loving kindness. When you develop metta, you cannot be angry. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. So when there is cruelty, you develop compassion. When you have compassion, you cannot have cruelty. When you got anger and hatred, you also can develop loving kindness, metta. That's why the Buddha said the first way is thought-based. Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. When there is craving, lust, he said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought, which is contentment. That's why all these are in the teaching. But these are thought-based. You cannot live life if you just do this. Every time you got anger, you sit, look for a quiet place, with the metta. Then after that, no wisdom, it doesn't root out, then what happens? You go back to life. You see something or hear something that you don't like, you get angry again. So that is not the way to root it out. You can temporarily overcome it. And that is not the what they call wisdom way to root it out. Then after that, the Buddha said, okay, if this one doesn't work, then he go on to the second way. Then he advised the monk, he said, think of the consequence of holding on to that wrong thought. What is the consequence? If you hold on to that anger, the hatred, the envy, the jealousy, the craving, the desire, the selfishness, the possessiveness, or your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, all these are negative mind state. They are called the three evil roots, root of all evil. They will make you evil. It will bring about your karmic downfall. So you will determine, based on this understanding, where your life, you decide. You want the evil root to be there and make you evil, cause your karmic downfall, then Dhammapada was one, take its course. Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hoof of the ox. So understanding this is very important. That's why you will arise the right effort to use the thought, determine to abandon it. Because you see the danger. That's why I said, think of the consequence, the danger of holding on to this thought. So when you understand this, then you come to understand. The moment anger arises, hatred arises, it's an evil root, it makes me evil. Then what must you do? Why do you get angry with people? If you can forgive them, what happened? You think you forgive people. When you forgive them means you remove your hatred, understand or not? In actual fact, you free yourself. Why do you want to hold on to all this, which your thought tells you? These are all wrong view, wrong thought, born of wrong understanding. The thought will say, hey, that guy did this to you, you know. You should take revenge. Then you listen to your thought, where you thought the thought is your friend. But in fact, without wisdom, the thought is the most dangerous thing. So all this understanding will surface. Then the Buddha say, this first two is still thought-based, will not be very effective. when it comes to learning the wisdom. So he said the third way is to maintain awareness. Yeah. When you just maintain awareness, like in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, when anger arises, aware. When sensual desire arises, aware. So the first category of Dhamma Nupassana is mindful of the five mental hindrances of mind. When you aware, means you develop the what they call understanding of it through being aware of it. When you just aware, what happened to the anger? What happened to that fear? What happened to all the negative mind state? Yeah? What happened? With awareness, it got no thought, nothing. What happened? It will cease to be, isn't it? Because you don't feed it with any more wrong thought, wrong energy. Then you realize all this mind state is not intrinsic within your nature. They are dependent, originating mind state, born of wrong thought, wrong view. That's why you stay with it. Maintain the tranquility, the awareness, the stillness. Then the natural state of mind before the stirring return. Understand? It stir and create anger, fear. Because from your wrong view, wrong thought, it stir and create that negative emotion. Then when you just aware, you realize it ceases. Then you liberate your mind because you come to understand anger was never you. Because you cannot see things as they are. You cannot accept the reality for what it is. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will like that. You don't understand all this teaching. That's why you have your duality created by your own mundane thinking, your thought, your mano. And this is how living being cultivator get themselves entangled. And they dislike all this. They say, after cultivating so long, I still have anger, I still have selfishness, I still have greed, I still have fear, worry, anxiety. What is all this? This is clarity, delusion. Because in the first place, they were never you. So the third way is the most powerful. Silence your mind. And let whatever mind state that arises cease to be. That's why in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, if you develop mindfulness of the five mental hindrances, you will come to understand how the unarisen five mental hindrances come to be. Because before you got the mental hindrance of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind and doubt, there were none, isn't it? So after they arise, that's why you saw through your wrong view, wrong thought, wrong understanding, they manifest. That's why they are dependent originating. Then you stay with that craving or sensual desire or the ill will, especially fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, you stay with it. Don't give it any more thought energy, wrong thought, wrong view. It ceases. When it ceases, there is tranquility, stillness of mind, your true mind returns. And that was your original mind, true mind, your original state before the stirring. So stay with this mind, then you are free of all the duality and suffering. So you see it, then you understand. Then you will come to understand how all these mental hindrance that have arisen, if you continue to maintain awareness, how they cease to be. You understand? Yeah? That's why in the sutta it's mentioned very clearly. Initially, you come to develop the understanding of how the unarisen one arises. Then after they arise, you maintain awareness, then they cease. Through what? Through not doing anything. Understand? Through developing the understanding that the true mind is without duality, without the mundane thinking, the creation. That's why you're free. But this way, you didn't develop very much wisdom. You only know how to free that mind when it comes into contact. Everything, every time maintain mindfulness, awareness. Yeah. Like what Hui Ning did, polish until it shines so that no dust can arise. Why must you do that? That's why the Buddha teach the fourth way. What is the fourth way? Trace the origination factor. How did this mental hindrance come to be? Then through that understanding, retrospectively reverse it. And there is wisdom. And in the teaching, what is it that you learn? The Buddhas always teach. Condition like that, things will be like that. Whatever arise, there are causes and conditions behind. Then he also say, learn to see things as they are. That's why that wisdom is very profound. If I develop the direct seeing to see things as they are, then there is no duality. No right, no wrong, no good, no bad, no defilement, all those things, which sense you fail to penetrate. There's a Hui Nong, when he was at the pure awareness nature, he understand all this. That's why he see by observation with the silent mind, then he understand how the mental hindrance that has not arisen come to be. Then by being silent and aware, he know how it sees. Then he trace the origination factor, means it always starts with one of your senses. Either you see something, then you stir your mind, you get angry. Or you hear something, somebody tell you, then you get angry or fearful, emotional. Or you recall a phobia, a very negative thought, memories. Then fear arises. Worry, anxiety arise. Then you project your thought again, all this arise. So you have to trace this origination factor. What is the cause of all this? Due to your sakayaditi, self-delusion. And when you have this self-delusion, you always arise a wrong thought because you have duality, your belief system, your conditioning. And all this continuously develop the habitual tendency to react, stir, and create more and more problem and emotion. What if you can see things as they are, like the Buddha said, the world is the world, condition like that, things will not. Then I can be at peace with all situations. Do you understand? Then if I see somebody, then I react and get angry because the memory recall that this guy last time cheated you, did all this nonsense to you. It's all because of that memory, understand or not? But you can accept him for what he is, means see things as they are. He is the way he is, understand or not? I don't like get angry with him anymore. We are deluded people do deluded things, understand or not? Selfish people do selfish things. And angry people do angry things. So they are the way they are. It doesn't mean that you accept everything, understand? Whatever they do, you don't care. No. The acceptance is through your wisdom, they are just the way they are, understand? When they manifest all this, that is coming behind, and they will get themselves entangled, and nothing to do with you. Why must you react to what they do? And then you realize, if I can see things as they are, and accept them for what they are, and accept the world for what they are, condition like that, things will, like that, then I realize every moment also I'm at peace. I does not need to stir my mind. That's why with this understanding, you can develop the understanding, which is wisdom, to be at peace, means you straighten your view. You do not react and stir to your wrong view. Now you understand. And that is how you free. That's why the fourth way is the wisdom way. When wisdom arises, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha mentioned, he said, after you have understood how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be, then how when you maintain mindfulness, you come to understand how the arisen mental hindrance cease to be. Then when you trace the origination factor and retrospectively reverse it, then you realize with that wisdom, this mental hindrance will not arise again in the future. You understand? It's all written in the Satipatthana Sutta. Why don't you all read it up and understand it? But the trouble with the Theravada teaching and all is very few people, hardly anybody can understand this. Because to see things as they are is very difficult. Understand? No? Ask you not to get angry, not to be fearful, not to react, not to do anything. People say, you must be the most stupid guy in the world. Understand? People did all this nonsense to you and you can still accept them for what they are. Especially spouse. When their husband want to divorce them already, do all those things already. The first thing they ask me is, when I teach them the three ways, I say, ask for forgiveness first. He said, Brother Theo, you must be out of your mind. You asked me to ask for forgiveness from that. He used the word B-A-S something. No more darling, no more husband. That is the reaction, understand? The tendency immediately come out. But when you understand, I never say you don't act, understand? You accept them for what they are. You accept the world for what it is. Then you act, understand? Doesn't mean you don't act. You act to resolve your problem. That is the Dhamma way. How do you act? You act with wisdom, no more from memory, understand? Wisdom following the Dhamma way, following the understanding that the Dhamma has taught you. That's why this wisdom way is the way out of suffering. And what is this way? Huh? Ayo, fourth noble truth, what is this way? Noble Eightfold Path. Apply Noble Eightfold Path. No negativity one. All right view leading to right thought, right spirit. Then resolve everything amicably. Can be done. I have done it many times. Even Elsie's daughter, so just now on the way down to lunch, I asked her, because Elsie was with her, I said, girl, can you follow? Can you understand? She smiled. She said, yeah, I can. Oh, I said, very good. How come you can follow? Well, I thought she quite new. You know what she told me or not? She said, Brother Theo, when I have some life problem and issue recently, she said, I listened to your video. Then I understood what you mean. And from there, the understanding free my mind. He said, that's why I want to attend the retreat. And this is how people who listen attentively can develop the understanding. What I explained to you just now, is it very difficult to do? Huh? No. But you cannot do it because that old habit, the old reaction, they call that habitual tendency, very difficult to root out. That's why the Buddha said the second turning, you must contemplate, reflect until very, very clear. Then only that wisdom arises. Then you tell yourself, I do not want to be so deluded and foolish again. Why every time also react? It's like you are so predictable. No? Predictable means what? They know how to make you angry. Press this button, you get angry already. Say something like that, fearful already. Then give you a bad news, worry, anxiety, sorrow, everything arises already. How come you can become like that? Because that is heedlessness, sakayaditi, self-delusion, ignorance. So the Dhamma way is the wisdom way to transform you, straighten your view, and change you completely. Okay? So can understand? Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So no more, finish. Huh? Now we follow the sutta again. Go back to Heart Sutta. Hmm. Who want to read? Manyan, Manyan read. Attempt me got to jaga video. You read first.
Page 19, Third Heart Sutra class. Why must we go through the introductions by Master Xuan Hua? Question 1. Why, Brother Teo answered, a very good question. It will be like building a high-rise building without having a stable foundation. As I have explained, the Heart Sutra is a very profound teaching, and it must be understood that without a proper foundation being taught to you, it is almost near to impossible to understand this teaching, unless some of you have had some very strong past cultivation to help support you in the understanding of this sutra. Hence, this is the reason why I started off by introducing to you the final summary of the first noble truth of dukkha, followed by an in-depth explanation of the meaning of the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind in the first Heart Sutra class. This is to help establish a basis for you to understand the great similarity between Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching and that of the Heart Sutra as expounded by Guan Yin Bodhisattva. Both teachers emphasize the importance of understanding the five aggregates of form and mind and why they are all empty, i.e. anatta and sunatta. The introduction by Master Xuan Hua also explained how wonderful and full of wisdom this sutra is and also why it is so important to read through this sutra diligently many times, because each repetition will reveal to the reader a new depth or a new level of understanding, thus bringing about immeasurable benefits. In a book 10 times its length, one could not fully praise its value as a key to the understanding of human life. Hence the famous saying, true emptiness is wonderful existence, i.e., understanding true emptiness can lead to deep understanding of human life. Hence, life or existence will become very meaningful and very wonderful once this Heart Sutra wisdom has been developed. Master Xuan Hua also stressed on the importance of having real spiritual understanding rather than deep learning or knowledge-based understanding only, as a true prerequisite for expounding this Heart Sutra. The main concern of the Heart Sutra and all the other sutras that the Buddha has spoken is simply to understand deeply the birth, life, and death of living beings. Answering?
Wait, so this birth, life, and death of living beings is a direct translation of the Mandarin, Liao Sen Si. You know what is Liao Sen Si or not? To transcend birth and death. Yeah. So, ability to understand deeply the birth, life, and death of living being means you can transcend birth and death. You can realize enlightenment. Okay, continue.
Answering questions like, why must we avoid all evil, do good and purify our mind? Why are we born and where will we go when we die? What we must do while here? How we can stop our suffering and find true happiness for ourselves and others? What is death? What dies and who dies? Who are you? And what are you? What is life? How to understand its meaning and purpose?
So, how many of you have really contemplated into life to this extent? Huh? Have you ever questioned yourself? Huh? Why must you follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid evil, do good, and purify your mind? Maybe now you know this part. But Have you asked yourself, why are we born? Why are you born? And where will you go after you die? Yeah? Then while you are here, what must you do? What is your purpose of life? Have you all really gone into it? Yeah? The purpose and intent of life. Huh? Nobody? Yeah? Are you all? Ah, yes, some do really contemplate. Huh? Then the other part is, he still asks, no. How can you stop all this suffering and find true happiness for yourself and others? Then the other one is very good. What is death? Have you all found the answer? Who dies? What dies? Then who are you? What are you? If you can answer all this with the right understanding, then you would have been enlightened by now. Yeah. So these are the things that you have to inquire, probe. Yeah. That's why when I was young, I remember after Form 5, I like to look at the sky. I lie down in the open field, and you know my state, Kedah, hardly any mountain, or very few mountain. It's a Kedah plain, rice mill. People plant paddy. So when I look up, the whole sky is full of stars and all this thing. Yeah. Then I always inquire, you know, who am I? What am I? What am I here for? Because that by then I already know science. I already understood to a great extent what this universe is all about, the immense universe. And our sun is only like one of the stars. Some are smaller, some are bigger. And we are only a living being or a human being within this planet Earth, which is just the third planet from the sun. And ours is a very minute solar system. Then that time, the population was less than 6 billion. I say, compared to the 5 to 6 billion human beings, you are only one of them. Very insignificant now. But our planet is even more insignificant now. This is only one of the stars. No? There are countless, no? Billions and billions and billions of, not only star, galaxy, star system. And they are so immense and so wide. You are talking about traveling at the speed of light. It takes you almost 13 to 14,000 light years, though, traveling at the speed of light, take you so long to reach the so-called age of the universe or the immensity of the universe. You may not have reached the age, you know, because after that, still got things they haven't proven. Yeah. So all this, my nature probe. Then the funny thing is, inside suddenly pop out one answer. No? You want to make a guess or not? What is the answer inside there? Ah, very good. Meditate, because Padmasuri heard before. I say, meditate. Oh yeah, meditate. If I don't meditate, I cannot understand. At that time, I really know I must meditate. No? But I don't even know what is meditation at that time. I haven't really seen the book, The Four Noble Truths. But funny, you know, a few months later, somebody gave me this book. My classmate, the sister, also Theo, I don't know why, a lot of Theo. He saw me like to sit quietly on my own. And I seldom mix with people when I was young, although I can interact all those things. But whenever we go for whatever, like short trip, like you ride your bicycle last time, you go, then they go to the beach, like Tanjung Dawai or whatever, or go to this mountain. What is that mountain? Gunung Jerai, in Kedah. I like to silence myself and close my eye and develop my own spiritual inner understanding. Then she saw. That's why she later on passed me that book, What Buddhists Believe, Chief Reverend, first edition. I don't know how she got it also, I don't know. And that book he passed to me. He said, Theo, this might interest you, he said. And when I received it, I didn't know what it is until I read it. When I saw the Four Noble Truths, I was full of gratitude. I said, this is what I need. That's why after that, I said, no need to search. That's it. Nobody can have this type of profound understanding. That's why all this can happen when you have your path. Otherwise, you will never inquire and probe all this. Okay? Now continue. Yeah.
Question 2. Why must we also study the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra? Brother Theo answered, as the Heart Sutra teaching is so profound, because it is beyond thought, beyond mind, and beyond the conditioned world. Hence, we need to understand the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra, especially so, the two famous poems as written by Shen Xiu and Hui Neng. Only then we can develop the understanding to go beyond mind to understand the Heart Sutra, which is so abstract, with saying such like form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And therefore, in true emptiness, there is no form, feeling, etc. No eyes, ears, no sights, sounds, no view of eyes, up to and including no view of mind consciousness, no ignorance or ending of ignorance, up to and including no old age, sickness and death, or ending of it, and no Four Noble Truths, and no understanding, and no attaining, etc.
Okay, so maybe I have to explain this part of the Heart Sutta. You remember, this one taken the photo. Okay, somebody help me to rub this off down here. This four circle don't rub. In the Heart Sutta, you remember, the first statement is, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva to Sariputta. Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. For form itself is emptiness, and emptiness is form. So how can you understand? Form does not differ from emptiness. So I ask you, this solid fellow, you say is empty. Those who with the mundane mind tell you, you must be mad. This one is so real, so solid. So what you have to understand is, maybe you are waiting for Sui, I use the other side. So here, let's say you have a rectangular object. So this rectangular object is our external form, okay? But before this object arises, due to its condition arising entity, what was this space? Yeah? It's just an empty space, isn't it? True or not? So according to science, we all know, space is something that is, although we say empty, not really empty, because we know got atmosphere, got all the, what they call gas or whatever, the composition of our atmosphere. Maybe near to 80% is oxygen. Then nitrogen about 20%, then rare gases. That is what our atmosphere is. That's why it can sustain life. So when you understand that before this object arises, basically it's just space, understand? So this space, you call it empty space, understand? Empty space. So that space, which was empty, nothing, then due to condition, this form arise. After this form arises, do you really understand why the sutta say form does not differ from emptiness? Because the space it occupies is the empty space, understand not? That's why this form does not differ from the empty space. Do you understand? So form does not differ from emptiness. Then the emptiness also does not differ from form, because this form is basically that space that it occupies. So these two are actually the same. Next time I must buy more of this. I hope I can last the 9 days. We have this one only, the last one left, I think. Have to shake, you shake for me. Sorry. So this is the first aspect, understand not? Form does not differ from the empty space. That's why form does not differ from emptiness. Then this emptiness also does not differ from form, because it occupies the same space. Understand not? That is the first one. But Kuan Yin Bodhisattva go on and say, it is because form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. Why did he say that? Which means form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Now it's no more defer at all, understand not? Form does not defer, that one can understand it after I explain. Yeah? But now he add the second stanza, he said, for form itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is form. How do you understand that? I already taught you on the first day. How does this form arise? Dependent originating, isn't it? And whatever that is within the conditioned world, it follows the conditioned Dhamma, like the Buddha said, whatever arise, there must be causes and condition behind. So this one basically is not a permanent unchanging entity. It arises and sustains itself through causes and conditions. When the causes and conditions cease to be, then what happens? It ceases to be. Understand not? That's why it's not real. Not a permanent unchanging entity. It's dependent originating, condition arising. And this is the basis of emptiness. Empty nature of existence. Like this table. Without the causes and conditions, somebody together the material, the skilled worker to work on it, put it on sale, then we buy it. All these are causes and conditions for it to arise. Understand? Ah, yes. Very good. That's why you think you are real. You are karmically conditioned now. Without you knowing it. And without your choice and understanding, understand? You cannot choose to come here. You don't have the Bodhisattva's understanding. You have to come. You know what is have to come or not? Huh? Huh? Karma take you here, understand? Not? That's why you have to come. You are born of your karma. Add to your karma condition and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So karma take you here. But if you have developed the enlightenment, the awakening, and become a bodhisattva, you can choose to come. Understand? No? You can choose the causes and conditions based on your understanding and your vow. And all those affinity within the nature's law. That's why you can make that choice. So in the Mahayana teaching, it's mentioned, after you have realized the true nature, somebody help me to write Mandarin. Yeah, come. English. 了了见性，常住. When you have realized your true nature, 性 is your true nature. Thank you. 常住 means you can stay in that state for very long. Yeah. Then you can choose when you want to arise and when you want to come through the karmic process. That's why all this understanding are not easy. to develop. Unless you go that bodhisattva way and you develop all this cultivation to have that understanding. Okay? So there is no more issue about the Heart Sutta being esoteric or very, what we call, there's another word, what you call, like very difficult to understand one, as if it's so profound. Actually, profound is okay. Profound means not easy to understand. But there is another word actually. Esoteric, and the other one is like very difficult to comprehend. What word is it really? I forgot it. Esoteric is one of them, understand? No? Like very abstract, the word is abstract. Like the teaching is very abstract, understand? No? You cannot make head or tail out of it. No? Oh. But actually, it's not that abstract, is it? When you can understand, you can explain and you can teach. That's why I find it no contradiction. The Heart Sutta, the Mahayana Sutta, and the Theravada Sutta is the same. Well, the basis of all this is understanding anatta. Anatta is not only non-self. Non-self is a small part of anatta. Anatta means empty nature of existence, not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why in the morning chanting, you remember? Rupang anicang. Rupang anatta. What is form? Rupang. Is it a human being? It's not a human being, is it? Then why the Buddha say all of rupang is anatta? Means the Buddha is not referring to form as a human being, understand not? Form is non-self, no meaning is there, understand not? Form is empty, got meaning, understand not? So empty nature exists. Form is not a permanent unchanging entity, form is dependent originating, you understand? Condition arising, phenomena, like Emily say, including us. Understand? You don't think you're very solid and very real. You are just the five aggregate of form and mind arising and passing away. Every moment of consciousness, every moment of what they call mental manifestation. Is that what you are? A series of thought moments. As real as it can be. It's only within the moment, the present moment. And it's so transient. Arise, pass away, arise, pass away. Split second is dead and gone. And that is the only reality in life and existence. So how real can life be? Understand not? So when you see all this, you penetrate all this, then you realize form also like that. Arise and pass away. How does form arise and pass away? Huh? You think I joke? You think I lie to you? Yeah? How can this whiteboard pass away? It doesn't pass away, understand not? I ask you one question, then you understand. How do you know it's a table, it's a whiteboard? Through your mental perception, is that where you open your eye, you can see that, you perceive that. Then arise, next moment you close your eye, it's gone, understand not? Arise and pass away. Once the perception is not there, it ceases to be. That's why everything is just like that, arise and pass away. That's why I say, for those who see, they always see. But the universal characteristics are inherent in all phenomena, whether it's form or mental. So all this understanding, you can only penetrate if you have the pure awareness nature developed very stable. Then you see them appearing and disappearing, arising and passing away. The moment of its arising, sustained and then passing away. Everywhere. In the midst of life and nature, truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Yeah. So that see is not the Hokkien word, die. No. I'm on. See. So that seeing is the direct seeing, not the thought-based manifestation of consciousness, that type of seeing, that one is mundane seeing. Okay? Now we continue.
Six Petra Platform Sutra. Based on his poem, then, Sunsiu has yet to realize the true mind, hence his inability to comprehend the higher Dharma as realized by Hui Neng. The reason being, he is using the mundane mind to cultivate, hence the delusion. In my second and this third Heart Sutra classes recap, I delve in more detail into Hui Neng's Platform Sutra, and I also taught you how to see form, the unreality of form, its condition arising or impermanent nature, and its non-self and empty nature, so as to enable you to develop the wisdom to finally see beyond form. This is then followed by the same understanding that all the other four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana, are also impermanent, causes suffering, and are empty. Only then can you start to develop the understanding of why form is emptiness and emptiness is form.
So now you understand, huh? Because of what I shared yesterday and today, all this become very easy to understand, very clear. Okay? Anybody got question? Huh? You got question, you can ask, don't worry. Yeah? Hear the chipping of the bird, huh? Very loud and clear. Because when you are with your true mind, true nature, everything is very clear, the chipping. You are not lost in thought, preoccupied with all these things. If you listen to me and think, you will never perceive the chipping of the bird, I tell you. You will hear your own chattering, your own mental chipping, although no sound, but very active inside that. Purposely let you all listen. Oh, definitely. In fact,
your realization.
Not only the bird, everybody within the existential world, life itself is your greatest teacher. Understand not? Because Dhamma is truth. Truth is within life and existence. That's why everything within existence is your teacher. Yeah?
Teach Dharma.
Yes.
And if they say that in the Amitabha Pure Land, there is no evil. Three evil realms, right?
Yeah.
No animal realms and no human. So the Amitabha Buddha, he transformed all these birds. They are not come from, from the...
Well, that one is
no
a,
evil realm.
Well, that one is a pure land. Yeah. You understand or not? And do you know the Pure Land is not part of the 31 plane of existence? Yeah. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Pure Land arises through the vows, the 48 major vows of Amitabha Buddha. Amitabha, 48大愿. And he cultivated the longest, where he go through the faith way. That's why he... It takes him 12 Asankhya Kappas. But because of his vow is so powerful, by virtue of his perfection virtue, that it can transform and give rise to that type of what they call existence. That's why all the Pure Land cultivator, they actually make that vow to take rebirth at the Pure Land so that they can progress faster. But it's mentioned in the Amitabha Sutta also. There alone, you cannot develop the full cultivation. To develop the full cultivation, you must come back to the 31 plane of existence. That's why off and on, all those beings that take rebirth there, they have to come back to the 31 plane of existence.
Yeah, you have to have the 37 factors of enlightenment too.
Yeah.
In order to be reborn.
Because that is what the existential world is. You need to penetrate not only Pure Land, the unconditioned Dhamma teaching, You have to penetrate the conditioned world's Dhamma. Then you can understand life. Then you can live and teach and share all this. That's why Amitabha's vow is exceptional. You think easier to create Pure Land. And they have a song, no? He always used the word Lian Hua, the lotus. Yeah? So, Yi Duo Yi Jing Tu, you heard of that, isn't it? Oh, you don't know Mandarin?
Don't know Mandarin.
Yi Duo Hua La, Yi Duo La. Aiya, same one la. Yi Duo Hua and Yi Hua, what is the difference? Understand? So that flower, Yi Duo Yi Jing Tu, understand? Then Lian Hua Chu Chu Kai. You know what is there or not? That lotus keep on blossoming, you know, everywhere, you know. And every of these lotus is a pure land, you know. You now understand why Amitabha's vow is so powerful. That's why it's very difficult to comprehend the profoundness of vow, adhittan, understand, you know, that perfection. If you can perfect that, all these are possible. Even pure land can arise. So what you read in the sutta is sometimes, I don't know, people read it, true or not. You say the pure land, yeah, is paved with all the jewelry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, then, like Emily say, the bird also can teach Dhamma and all those things. That everything is so perfect, because people cannot comprehend. They say, "Call like that one way." It appears like very magical, like a bit kuajiong, understand? But no, because it's manifested through the vow, understand? That's why there, I don't know how to maybe describe it. Maybe I give you the analogy, you will know. Last time when we were in the university, so you know, university student very cheeky and very naughty. So end of the year, I think near to Christmas, I think, they try to convert you, they come. And they send all the pretty young girls. So we were in the college, staying in the dormitory. So what happened was, about four or five, one group of them, not on our room, no. We were all the classmates inside there discussing things and having fun, of course. Then suddenly come in, no. Then everybody, you know, engineering students, mostly men or male. So excited. Oh, what is it? Oh, everybody tried to listen, no. Then they try to explain what their religious belief is. Then it came to a point where, you know, we all have been cheeky and naughty. So the way we reply, I think they cannot take it. They say, wait till you go to hell, then you understand. Then one guy put up the hand. He said, I think hell is a better place than heaven. You know why he said that? I go to heaven, boring. No? Up there, I don't have my kaki to play mahjong with me, you know, to joke with me, to play badminton, all those things. You know. So pure land is like that. You know. Understand? You know? Everything perfect one. You know. No vices, nothing one. You know. Then the other joke I think you all also heard from the internet, is that the hell, last time, terrible place there. Then what happened was, some engineers died and got born down there. You know. And this hell king, very smart, you know, he said, oh, you're an engineer, you, we need you. Solve all our problems in hell. Then they realized, not long after that, wow, hell got aircon, you know. Hell got highway, you know. Hell got sewerage system, everything. You know. Then they reach that type of progress until like they are going to be better than heaven, no? Because they have all the vices and the good one. No? Then they say cannot. They want to make a rule. Of course, it's a joke. Lah. All engineers after they die cannot go to hell. Must keep in the heaven. So this is the joke. Although it's a joke. But what I want you to understand is Dhamma is like that. Not so easy to comprehend. Understand? When you read the Mahayana Sutta, you don't go and create from your mental mundane thinking that this is all nonsense. Cannot be. Understand? That's why when they mention in a lot of sutta how all this, especially Sakyamuni, when he expounded that Lotus Sutta, it was mentioned that all of the gods, all the devas, everything until the Brahma rhyme, they quack and they don't know what. And a lot of them gather. You may think that it is fairy tale. I can tell you, when I developed the meditation, I went through this rhyme. And exactly like in the Jataka story, these devas, they can come, no, like a very big cluster or swarm. No. They appear very fast, no, then they disperse very fast. That is real. That is not Jataka story. And you see in the drawing that these devas, they come and listen to the teaching or things, then they disperse. It is real. But they are like that. Very fine form. And they move very fast. So a lot of things that is beyond your mundane thinking, you cannot comprehend. So don't make the mistake of like coming to that type of conclusion just because you haven't have the understanding to understand it. That's why when you cannot understand certain teaching of the Mahayana tradition or what, don't be too eager to comment. Okay? Have an open mind. Whatever you don't understand, say you don't understand. That's it. Because it will prevent unnecessary karmic obstruction. Okay? Yeah, we continue.
1.4. Mundane life with and without spiritual understanding. We can be very successful in life, both financially and career-wise. Both are mundane aspects of life. But without the spiritual understanding, we are still vulnerable and many things can still afflict us, especially so the First Noble Truth's 8 conditions, which are also the realities of life and existence. This is the reason why the Buddha renounced the world. Once he saw the 4 signs of an old man, a very sick man, a dead man, and a samana, or a renounced holy man in robe. Then Buddha had to be realized that he had a problem with regards to old age, sickness, and death. Hence, he seeks the spiritual understanding to gain the wisdom to free himself from these problems. He then developed the spiritual understanding and became a Sammasambuddha underneath the Bodhi tree. Without the true spiritual understanding of wisdom, one cannot be free from all suffering because one can still have fear, worry and anxiety, etc., via one's own self-delusion, which will condition one to cling on to and grasp at one's 5 aggregates of form and mind. Hence, one should realize the importance of cultivating the spiritual understanding via meditation as taught by the Buddha to enable one to live the noble life of love, peace, joy, and harmony. Only then can there be no more fear, worries, anxieties, and unhappiness and suffering, etc. The spiritual understanding will lead to non-delusion and wisdom, enabling one to clearly understand who you are, what you are, and how human beings function, and eventually leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. 1.5. Essential Understanding. In the recap, Brother Teo emphasized on the following. 1. The importance of understanding Dhammapada verses 1, 2, 183, 21, 22, and 23. And the final advice of the Buddha before his parinibbana. Once one comprehends these verses, one will understand the importance of training the mind to be heedful and ever mindful. One will like wake up from their deluded dream state while seeing the danger of heedlessness, and one will then be very serious about life to develop the cultivation. 2. The danger of letting these three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, which are the roots of all evil, from manifesting in our heart. 3. The importance of arising the four right efforts to root out the three evil roots and the five mental hindrances. 4. The importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculties to overcome the five mental hindrances of mind. Notes. Number 1. Under Kaya Nupassana, there is a category of cultivation called Satisampajana, mindfulness and the four types of clear comprehensions of every action and movement in the present moment. This is the most important cultivation. It can help stabilize one's sati or mindfulness via the daily mindfulness cultivation. Hence, this is the reason why Brother Theo always says, life itself is the real meditation and life is our true teacher. Number 2. The four types of clear comprehensions are clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose, clear comprehension of domains of meditation, clear comprehension of suitability, and clear comprehension of non-delusion. Number 3. The domains of meditation means one can meditate in any posture, anywhere, any place, and any time, under any circumstances. Number 4. Anything, external form that is created by mind via perception, is only a mental image. It comes and it goes, hence it is impermanent, not so real and empty. To cling onto it is obviously a delusion. Form is never a problem if we know how to develop the mind to understand it, so that we are not deluded or deceived by it. Number 5. Cultivating the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha, leading to the three types of corresponding wisdom called Sutta-maya Panya, Citta-maya Panya, and Bhavana-maya Panya is very important. For details, please refer to Brother Theo's Dharma notes on understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Fourth Heart Sutra class, 1.1, emphasis on the previous lesson, emptiness. Number 1. Emptiness, or sunatta in Pali, is a term frequently used in the Mahayana tradition verse. The term non-self, or anatta in Pali, which is the equivalent term that is frequently used in the Theravada tradition. Number 2. Importance of understanding why our physical form and all external forms can also be expressed as form is impermanent brings about suffering when we deludedly cling onto it without understanding and its empty or anatta nature. To understand it clearly, we must have the ability to see its manifestation via mind's perception with clear mindfulness to recognize it as conditioned arising phenomena. Hence, it is not a permanent unchanging entity that we can cling onto or hold onto as the I and the me, or own as the mind, thus seeing it as empty, sunatta or anatta, because it has no apparent reality. Also, a cultivator needs to develop the wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind via a clear and stable daily mindfulness cultivation. Number 3. Form delusion can be very powerful. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind, because mind is much grosser. Form is much grosser, whereas mind is very subtle. However, wisdom born of the direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. Number 4. Definition of samana. A samana is a renounced holy person in the robe, seriously cultivating the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha. He or she is also usually referred to as one who is already enlightened. The term is used as opposed to the other term Brahmins who studied the Vedas during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha. To a samana, spiritual understanding is very important because without spiritual understanding, one cannot be free. One cannot understand the problems and realities of life and existence. There is a recently printed Dharma book for free distribution by WAVE, and the title of the book is Samana, on the life of the late Luangta Mahabowa. Our Kalimita Fund has also donated towards its printing for free distribution. Hence, we were given some copies of these books for free distribution by WAVE, and everyone who is interested in having a copy can request it from Brother Teo. 1.2 Essential Understanding. In the recap, Brother Teo re-emphasized on the following important Dharma. Number 1. The importance of understanding. True emptiness is a wonderful existence, leading to our ability to live life meaningfully and to the fullest. Number 2. True blessing comes from your own cultivation, via karmic inheritance, and nothing else, i.e. not due to your luck, feng shui, etc. Number 3. The importance of cultivating a very stable sati or mindfulness leading to heedfulness or apamada throughout the day. Number 4. Importance of repentance and asking for forgiveness sincerely. When you forgive someone, you actually free yourself from the evil roots of anger, hatred, and delusion. Part 2, Heart Sutra, Lesson 4. 2.1. Master Xuan Hua's very unique birth and his life history. On Guan Yin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamed that an old woman wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appeared to guide him. This unique birth and life history of Master Xuan Hua provided the conditions for Brother Teo to also share a bit of his unique spiritual affinities and encounters with Guan Yin Bodhisattva in his early years of cultivation, 1986, and the details are as described by him during the sharing on that day. For details, please refer to the web link or 16GB USB that contains the recording as produced by Brother Sui An. In 1986, Brother Teo and his whole family took refuge under Master Xuan Hua, and apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish the 10,000 vows of reciting homage to thee, my original teaching, a teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, within 3 months. Brother Teo completed it within less than 2 months. According to Brother Teo, this bowing, if done mindfully and with very strong sadha or faith and virya or the spiritual zeal, can lead one to a very stable daily mindfulness very quickly. 2.2 Question 1. Is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? The understanding of it is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instructions without understanding. You must understand why you bow and why you are doing in the name of meditation, i.e. do not just follow the instructions to do certain things via any method or techniques, etc., thinking that when you are doing all that, then you are meditating. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha cannot be gained unless one has developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. The various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various methods and techniques of meditation are only initial skillful means used to train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought most of the time. The main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind to it, so that one is always in the moment, mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, the trained mind will be silent, without thought, with awareness within, and such a mind is in a meditative state to see things as they are, without any concepts, ideas, or words. When the above is understood, then any method or technique can also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially. But finally, we need to develop the ultimate meditative mind with silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling as per the Diamond Sutra. Then one must let go of the meditation object and silent one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It is just like swimming. The float is just an initial skillful means, object of meditation, to help keep one afloat, and as long as one still holds on to the float, then one will never understand the actual swimming, because to swim with the float and without the float are two totally different experiences. Bowing or reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious actions, and it is a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practices as recommended by the Buddha to help one establish the faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual seal or viriya, and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. One can then bow mindfully and with understanding via a composed mind with strong sadha and viriya. Bowing is not idol worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation done out of great respect and gratitude for someone who has taught us so well, like the Buddha, who is fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtues. Since it is a meritorious action, the field of merits is immeasurable if it is done with understanding to the worthy or enlightened ones. Such merits can be made use of to arise the causes and conditions for us to progress quickly along the path of Dhamma while invoking the power of merits. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculties of sadha, viriya, and sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, the four things grow if we pay respect sincerely to our elders and worthy ones. The four things are Ayu, Vano, Sukham, and Balam. Their meanings are Ayu, long life, Vano, fair complexion, Sukham, happiness, and Balam, strength, both spiritual and physical. All these four blessings are very important for having the good life. 2.3. Question 2. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Is it the Theravada tradition's five-point prostration or the Mahayana's way of standing up, then going down to prostrate and come up again? Brother Teo answered, whichever way that suits you more, use it. The most important thing is, when you bow, do it mindfully, with very strong faith and viriya, and do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful with a moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought, hence heedless. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one in harmony without thought. When the mind is composed and without the five hindrances of mind, mindfulness will be there naturally. So develop the faith, compose the mind, then chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha, and then bow mindfully to develop the sati or mindfulness within. After a while, if you are sincere, patient and doing it with understanding, then it can bring about the conditions for sati or mindfulness to arise. Mindfulness arises through understanding and perseverance, and then mindfulness is firmly established. And when mindfulness is firmly established, there will be so much joy. The mind is so silent, so light, so composed, so still, yet fully aware within throughout the day. In every moment and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are, and direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. Things that are there all this while is three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha and anatta, etc., which the normal living beings never see, suddenly become very clear. This is the reason why Brother Theo always say to us, truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. 2.4. The three great Buddhist traditions, are they all the same or are they different? Brother Theo answered, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, like the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path, are essentially all the same for all the three traditions. It is only how they approach it that makes it appear to be very different because of different commentaries and interpretations of sutras, wire words, and terminologies used, and all these complicate the matter further as words are subjected to various interpretations. What is more important is not to argue and create any unnecessary and unhealthy divisions and misunderstanding within the various traditions, but instead to have an open mind and avoid all negativities. Make use of whatever that is relevant, useful and suitable for us, for each of us to progress along the path of Dharma while following the Buddha's advice to the Kalamas as stated in the Kalama Sutta. Harmony, love and understanding following the Noble Eightfold Path to resolve all issues amicably is very important, i.e. no more negativity. 2.5. Question 4. Can you explain the difference between the Pure Land teaching that talks about the Western Paradise and Nibbana as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha? Brother Theo answered, Pure Land teaching is based on Amitabha Buddha's great vows, which created the Pure Land, also called the Western Paradise, for those disciples or cultivators who have the affinity with him to continue with their cultivation and perfection. By virtue of Amitabha Buddha and all the other great bodhisattvas like Guan Ying, Manjushri, etc., great cultivation, their vows are very powerful because of their wisdom and perfections. Hence, this leads to their great vows to be integrated into nature's law, thereby enabling their vows to have such great, to have such special ability to create such pure land and manifest naturally, thus helping the cultivators and their disciples who know how to connect directly to their vows without themselves having to be there or at any specific place to help. This Pure Land or the Western Paradise is in the hearts of those who have developed the cultivation and have the ability to connect directly to Amitabha Buddha's vows via their silent mind with very strong faith while chanting Amitabha Buddha's name or his mantra. Chant until no one is chanting, i.e. the vibration and the mind has become one in perfect harmony and synchrony. This Pure Land or the Western Paradise is not within the 31 planes of existence as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. 2.6. Question 5. What are these 31 planes of existence? Brother Theo answered, according to Theravada tradition, the 31 planes of existence are the realms of existence within samsara, or existence where living beings have to undergo birth and death following their karma. It can also be called the three worlds. Number one, the formless world or Arupa Loka. Four formless realms of neither perception nor non-perception, nothingness, infinite consciousness and infinite space. Number two, the form world or Rupa Loka, 16 Brahma realms. Number three, the sensual world or Kama Loka, 6 Deva or heavenly realms plus 1 human realm plus 2 woeful states or suffering realms. The sensual realms are further divided into number one, suffering world of the sensual realms or Kama Dugati, and they are the four woeful realms of demons, animals, betas or hungry ghosts, and the hell beings. Number two, Kama Sugati, or the sensual realms of happiness, are the human realm and the six Deva realms. The Mahayana call it the six realms of birth and death, with one human realm plus four woeful realms remaining exactly the same, and the only difference is the Mahayana has only one heavenly realm to define all the six Deva realms plus the 16 Brahma realms and the four formless realms. Hence, 1 plus 4 plus 6 plus 16 plus 4 equals to 31 realms or planes of existence. Note, no thought ever mindful and constantly meditative imply ever mindful to constantly cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path equals to heedfulness, Dhammapada verse 23.
Okay, thank you. So exactly time, 3 o'clock. So now you can have your meditation. So make full use of this 1 hour meditation. You can develop the formal meditation, 45 minutes. We are sitting or lying down or walking, followed by 15 minutes of daily mindfulness training. We are Dhamma contemplation, bowing, reflection, inquiry within the vicinity of the temple area while in a standing, walking, sitting or lying down posture. Always be natural, relaxed and joyful. So since it's raining outside, I think you cannot go out. You might as well do it within the hall area. So we are off the light and we can have your 1 hour awareness-based meditation.